Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
It is Sunday night, and it is time for another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across the way, George P. Fraser. George, I just read an advanced copy of your biography. 92% of it has been redacted.
Well, if I knew what that meant, it would be a good joke.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing should be redacted.
I think your life is kind of a redaction.
Should I call my attorney, Ed, or are we going to have one of those shows?
No, I think you should just get a dictionary and look up redacted. Okay. I think it's kind of a good word.
Well, it's good evening to you, too. And we talk about delusion, and I think we own it on this show. always good. We got a great guest tonight.
Yeah, we do. And your life has been busy. You are, I see you, and I think, my gosh, God is sustaining you, giving you strength. You've got 33 years of sobriety, 33 and a half. Right?
Three quarters.
Three
but
quarters?
Who keeps track of that, Bill? It's not about me. It's about the Lord.
Thank you.
It really is.
I never
wanted to get sober.
No,
we
not
were
George
I was
Frazier.
Talking about that with my wife, Amy, the other day, who I met on this show.
Yeah.
And
nice plug for the show, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Nice
Aunt.
Of you to throw that out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We are on my show, not yours right now, right?
We're on your show right
okay,
now.
Okay, good. For me, I never wanted to do this, and I think people, when they get medallions, and I saw a couple this week, they always say, how did you do it? Well, you know what? I had a great acceptance speech, which I would give five times when the anniversary came around. I realized one day I didn't want to do it. God did the whole thing for me. And at a certain point, we've got our part. And I want to talk about that tonight, but we talk about a step every week. There's nothing magical about the steps, except they came out of the living word from the living God to help us transform ourselves. And it's a roadmap. As we talked about last week, Bill, the Fidelity investment commercial, the green line.
Yep.
This is how I walk out my faith, Philippians 2:12. Anyway, step three is we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. And that's gotten watered down, probably redacted, if that's
probably
the key
redacted.
Word tonight.
Yeah.
It's Jesus Christ. And with the Oxford group, what that meant was how far you were along in your relationship with Jesus. It's gotten watered down now to God as you create him, which is really an extension of yourself, which is why you got into recovery in the first place. You were being your own God. But what we look at here, Bill, what the recovery book talks about is we're an actor. We look at James, where it talks about a double-minded man is unstable in all that he does, tossed about like waves on the ocean. We create this person who we want to be. We are self-seeking. We want everybody to like us. We become the director of the play we're in. We want to control everything and everybody. And I'm sure when we hear the story tonight, there's going to be a duplicity, a dual life going. I had a corporate life, I had a church life, and I had my cocaine life.
Mm-hmm.
And those three parts can never meet, and unfortunately they do. So what this whole thing is about is giving your life to God, not to serve yourself, but to serve him. Thoughts, questions?
I like it, George. I like that all three, you talk about your past where you had different avenues. You had your work, your church, and your drugs. So that's an easy way to compartmentalize, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what
you can justify each component, each compartment, and you can function well in each compartment. So I think that's something that our listeners would be thinking to themselves right now. Yeah, that describes me too.
Yeah, it describes me even well into age and recovery. The actor, this is a role I play.
Yes.
And the role I play should be, what does God want me to do rather than what George wants to do? And so as we go along, we look at our lives. I think the spiritual progress that is talked about in the recovery book is things should bother you about your behavior that didn't a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Example from my life, you and I joke around a lot with each other because we're very good friends, although we would deny that publicly and to anybody
we'll
who knows.
Never see it in
writing.
No.
Don't hang with Bill at all. But I used to joke around with people and be a bit sarcastic, and I would say, well, if they can't take a joke, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. And one day God convicted me on that. It's like, I'm not okay with offending people. You know, and so that was the spiritual growth. Mm. The honesty thing, I think we realize, okay, maybe we don't directly lie like we used to, but do we embellish things? You bet I do. I'm a marketing guy. And
like you've got a yacht and two airplanes and a new Maltese passport?
Well, one jet.
One, okay.
I was going to try to buy one from Jesse Duplantis. I heard he's selling a used one to raise cash. But, you know, I have a tendency to always make myself look better. And if a little yarn on it will do it. And I think sometimes you go, hey, I kind of embellished that, which means I lied. So we're going to go to the Word all the time. And our guest last week, Justin from Redemption House, talked about being soaked, saturated in the Word, transformed by the renewing of our mind, praying only for, you know, knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. In church yesterday, the pastor talked about Psalm 46:10. And Bill, you know, I know you've gone to court with a lot of guys. And when I worked at the Salvation Army, where you still volunteer and do a great job every week, if you drive 94 to the Anoka Courthouse, there's that crane with a scripture on it, Psalm 46:10. And after driving by it for 3 years, I finally looked it up. And it basically says, be still and know that I am God. Mm. And I want to keep getting back to, this is not about stopping a behavior. It's about developing a relationship with the living God and not having him help you get out of trouble and stop your behavior, but become Christ-like, holy, be sanctified, and be the person he created you to be.
George, I love Romans 12:1. I think it's a nice tie-in to the third step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Romans 12:1 says, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship.
Yes.
That's not easy to do, to hand authority, total authority, over to God.
I'm in process on that.
Probably will be your whole life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it's real easy to do God's will when it aligns with mine. Then I'm all in.
Yeah.
But, we had a guest on, John Leonard, one time, and he said basically every morning he wakes up an atheist. I've seen him later in the day, and then might reoccur at lunch too, John, if you're listening. But I like that concept. I think it's out of Joshua. Choose today whom you will serve. As for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. And I have to make a decision in this step. But I need to work these steps every day, Bill. And as we talk about, there's no magic formula, a linear progression chart where check off 1, 2, 3. I'm actually, if you were in the studio, you'd see me checking.
I know.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Down, Bill. It's third down. So we want to do these as a lifestyle choice, and all the steps are doing. Bill is helping us to work out our walk.
When you think of turning your life over to the care of God, you know what it's like to turn your life over to the care of an anesthesiologist that's going to put you under, and then the surgeon's going to come in and take out your tumor in your lung.
You know, my favorite doctors are the ones that give me drugs, even today.
I get that. I get it. But I mean, you were turning your life over and saying, yes, I'm now yours, right? I mean, that's just a little microcosm of what it's like to say, I'm all in.
Well, I think for me, that's forced acceptance, okay?
No, I agree.
Because at the beginning of that, we were together and, you know, we're praying so it doesn't happen. And, you know, I'm not a prosperity gospel guy, but in the back of my mind, I always had this kind of thing where if I'm walking with God and Jesus every day, nothing really bad's going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And then you get into
what color's the sky in your world?
I know it.
My goodness.
But then you get into it and you realize there's nothing you can do. I mean, a lot of people, well-meaning, said, you know, George, if you're positive, you'll beat this.
No, that has nothing to do with anything.
Well, I don't think 11-year-old kids die from cancer because they're too negative.
Right.
And I think for me, one of the great blessings, and there were many, many blessings, Bill, I know that I'm going to heaven and I know it's real, is that I'm not God and I can't change any reality at all. But what I can do is submit to his lordship.
All right, let's...
And that's good enough.
It is. Let's alert our listeners that tonight, step three, is made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God. Is that where you're at tonight, George?
Yes, sir.
Encourage and coach people to do this, to turn their will.
Well, here's how you know if you're doing it. Are you doing it? And first of all, what you need to know is, what is God's will for your life? So you got to get your Bible open and read it. We talk a lot on these shows, Bill, about books that people write, and that's always great. You and I haven't written a book for a number of reasons. Number one, we don't really know anything. But number two,
lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah.
Number three, we want people to read the Bible and the recovery book.
Right.
I'm a big Bible guy. So the more you can read the Bible,
the better.
You need to.
All right, let's take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George, and then our guest in studio, Jed, will be with us in just a minute. Interrupt Stevie, isn't it, George?
Yes.
Let it play just a
minute. At least he wouldn't know who it was.
Welcome back to the show, Bill, George. We got Logan on the board tonight. We're awfully excited to have Jed in studio tonight. We're going to look forward to having a conversation with him. And I think what we're going to do is, George, just remind our listeners that if they have ever missed one of these episodes of Real Recovery and you do want to go back and listen to it again, we podcast all of these. You can go to myfaithradio.com and go to Real Recovery program page, and then you can just find all of the episodes of Real Recovery. You're going to want to collect and trade them with your friends, right?
Or you could play Grey Duck and move around.
Or you could play Grey Duck. There's all kinds of things you can do with the episodes of Real Recovery. I mean,
I was listening to one the other night. I'm always shocked that we're actually decent, you know?
Yeah.
But our guests are great. Can I say something here, Bill, because I'm going to?
I suppose you co-host the show. You can pretty much say what you want.
You know, our old producer was Alex. And I think people need to know, we talk a little bit about it, but we have a new producer of the show that's been doing a great job for us.
Logan Roush.
Yeah.
He's been doing a great job.
Good to have you on the show, Logan.
Appreciate that, George.
Yeah, you do a good job.
And Alex, you know, the legendary Alex Whitworth, I mean, we had 6 years of a blast with Alex. So much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a big surprise coming up we'll tell our listeners about later, but I haven't even told you yet, so I should probably tell you before I tell our listeners a little surprise that's coming up.
It's I know what it is.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it maybe a live presentation of Real Recovery?
Yeah, the guy who runs the station kind of bounced it off me.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, let's get our guest in studio onto
the
show.
Good to have you, Logan.
Yeah, I already said that, though.
I know, I didn't.
Don't give me too much praise.
Okay, that's enough talking.
Yeah. Okay. Our guest in studio is Jed Lindstrom. Jed, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You haven't left yet. This is always a good thing for us, George. You know, the guest doesn't leave.
He is standing up, though, and he was sitting down. So, you know,
he looked at me and looked at you, and you stand during the show, I sit. So I thought, well, he wants to take on your posture. I don't know why.
I thought
a lot
he
more
was
comfortable
leaving.
To sit.
I thought he thought, because this is a bad gig for me.
You know? No, I have a high level of ADHD, so I move around and the chair is squeaking, so I don't want that to disrupt anybody.
Great voice, too.
Great voice, yeah.
Well, why don't we welcome you to the show now? And we're
why
glad
don't
you're
you, George?
Here. Yeah, we're really glad you're here, and we talked a little bit before the show, and see, there's
so
no pressure.
Professional.
No,
so
I feel that. I feel you guys have relieved me of that right off the bat, so
good.
It's exciting.
So I understand you grew up in Stillwater.
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Yep. So what was that like?
Yeah,
it's a nice place.
Growing up in Stillwater was amazing. Stillwater is a beautiful town.
I agree.
You know, and
it is.
Yeah, it's a great place to raise a family and everything else. So it was exciting.
Now you had a little bit of your family of origin, mom and dad, ended up splitting it when you were 9 years old.
Yeah.
So that was I think a boy's world is no longer secure when mom and dad leave each other. Am I right?
Oh, well, you know, it's something I think every little boy wants, is to have a relationship with their father, have a relationship with their family as a whole. not splitting time, not dad leaving and giving up their rights and all of that. And so for me, as a young kid, knowing that, man, my mom and dad are no longer together, number one, that was a big shocker. But number two, having to split time in between the two of them wasn't really even an option because my dad gave up rights as a father, and so my mom had sole custody. And so for a little kid thinking, well, my dad abandoned me, now I'm rejected. So kind of dealing with some of those issues, which in the recovery community, we see that a lot. And so for me, I know that was a big transition in my childhood.
Well, that was, I'm not saying anything disparaging about parents when they separate because it's so difficult. But I'm sure your mom invested everything into her kids, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And not knowing, you know, when you're young like that, you don't know what goes into a family, why things happen and different things. So for a young boy like myself going through that situation, I just remember it being, you know, not only was it shocking, but it threw a lot of question marks up. Like, what did I do? And I, you know, young kids are so hard on themselves. And I know I was, and at times still am, but I know at that time I took it all on like it was all my fault. And so that really weighed on me. And then later on in life, really understanding that, wow, mom and dad had a life too.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of things that, you know, kind of, you know, fed into that decision that they had to make in their life to, you know, get a divorce and all of that. And so now I have a different viewpoint of it. But as a little kid, that breaks you. And it did for me.
So did you start to pour yourself into activity, friends, sports, anything? What happened?
Yeah, so I was actually real highly involved in baseball, basketball, football, and wrestling. And I did that primarily because I was diagnosed with ADHD, bipolar, Tourette syndrome. And so I know my mom, she just wanted to find out, you know, hey, where can we harness this energy? Because there's so much energy in this kid. If we don't unleash it in the right direction, it's going to go in the wrong direction, you know. And so for me, it was harnessing the energy. And I just pretty much got addicted to sports. And actually, even earlier than that, I was abusing the prescription drugs. And even while I was doing the sports and stuff like that, I started to kind of, you know, steal pencils, and I just kind of like went out there and, you know, went into the neighboring, like our neighbor's vehicles, went in there and like stole change out of their ashtrays. It was when cars still had ashtrays in them, right? And so that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it started to be addicted. I was addicted before I was addicted. It was just part of
So was some of
who
that,
I was
that
a young
stealing
kid.
Kind of an adrenaline buzz? Is that was one
yeah.
of those things? Or did you need to go actually get money to buy drugs? Or what was going on?
No, I mean, I wasn't even getting high at that time. I was getting prescription drugs for free, and I was, you know, still playing sports and everything else. So that addictive lifestyle, I was already getting addicted to it before I got into it. So it was that soft draw that I think a lot of addicts get into before they even know they're addicted.
Were
now
you
did that.
Taking them as prescribed, or were you your own doctor on that?
I had my own PhD and doctor's degree.
And what
and
age?
Everything else, so.
How old were you when you had your own PhD?
Well, I started abusing prescription drugs. I was probably around 12.
Okay.
But started using street drugs around 13, 14.
Okay.
Well, the generation behind us started younger and younger, and I'm sure for you that's the same way too. But that's interesting. When we get a mood-altering chemical in us, our body can't tell if it's prescribed or not. And one of the dangers, not going to knock the medical profession because I love them, is that we can take that and we have to own the fact that we got to take stuff the way it's prescribed. But it can light the candle for us, too. And that's the danger. But I think there's also, if I was a doctor, thinking it's going to do more harm to not prescribe this. And we've seen that with pain and, you know, ADHD. I mean, I got ADHD so bad. But I get that, and it's too bad. But it's interesting how people know that it does something. That's why they start taking more and more and more. Fair?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's the addiction cycle. You just never enough.
Yeah.
Never enough.
What's interesting to hear this, Bill, at the beginning, it sounds like we're going to get addicted to something just with the lifestyle. you know, all-in guy, all into sports. Mm-hmm. No hockey there. That would have been an improvement. But he's into this. This is how he gets his rewards. And now he's found something else that gives him a reward without any effort.
So now you're 13 and you're abusing your prescription drugs.
Yeah.
All right. Have you had a chance to experiment with anything beyond prescription?
No.
Or is that next?
That's next.
Okay. So you're now, are you in 7th or 8th grade?
7th.
Okay. Wow. 7th grade, and you're already on prescription drugs. What came next?
Well, I was on prescription drugs when I was 10. And so 10 to 13, I was regulating it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I started abusing it about, that was the third year in. So 13, turning 14, around that age, is when I actually started abusing it. That's the thing is you don't typically abuse it right away, right? You start out, you know, with all good intentions, and then all of a sudden it's like, this isn't enough, and you start doing it even at a higher level. And I think that's where I started getting addicted.
What was the result from taking more? Were you more hyped up? Were you more calmed down? What was the net effect?
I think more hyped.
Okay.
More hyped up.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it gave you energy and enthusiasm, and you were ready to go.
And then the euphoria, like
euphoria.
You do with when you find in any other mood-altering chemical and drug, alcohol. You know, it was an escape out of reality of where I was at. And so anything that did that for me, whether it was stealing or it was the prescription abuse on those drugs and stuff like, yeah.
Were you taking amphetamines?
Yes.
Okay. And that's the, you know, paradoxical effect that if we speed it up, it actually slows down the brain. The problem is there's a physical buzz that comes with it, too.
Right. And I know for me, that was kind of my slow fade into that. I remember as a young kid playing baseball, I came back from baseball practice, had my cleats over my shoulder, and we had a group of kids that were getting high and drinking and all that. And I always thought to myself, I wonder what it would like to be part of that group. And so I started to talk with them, started to engage with them, and that was kind of my slow fade out of my dream to be a Major League Baseball player and kind of my dive into the drug life and things like that. And so it was transition. That was my transition point into the more, if you would, quote unquote, soft drugs like marijuana and alcohol, the more socially acceptable drugs that we see nowadays. But in all honesty, it was really, you know, more of my introduction to the drug and crime life.
Does the drug crowd ever not accept somebody into their circle? I mean, I've heard this story 100 times where I saw the other guy, the other drug crowd, and I sort of, you know, started to hang with them, and all of a sudden then I was doing drugs. Did the drug crowd ever say, hey, Jed, we don't want you in our group?
Yeah. I think at the time when you become a liability to the group or the network or the organization, whoever you're associating yourself with, you know, that can definitely vary. You know, for me, I became an asset to that lifestyle, like, almost right off the bat. So I think they saw it. And in the spirit, they can recognize that, hey, I'm one of them. Even before I came,
yep,
they already knew it.
Gotcha.
So,
you know, you could get a guy like you that I would think was a narc, so we would keep you out.
All right. Thanks for listening tonight to Real Recovery. We're going to take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with us tonight, Bill and George. George, you know, Jed's a great guest so far. I'm not used to long, coherent sentences because I talk to you a lot.
Right.
So, I mean, he's doing a great job.
Sure.
So, Jed, this is a story that is a little... I'm not real familiar with the ADHD drugs. Because, you know, it's...
You're not familiar with any drugs.
I know I'm not. So, you know, but I know of a lot of kids today that are on them. That's scary.
Well,
I'm hearing this story.
You know, they're needed. We're not doctors. The problem is, I think if somebody's wired for abuse and addiction, and I think we do have a genetic predisposition, a lot of us. I'm Irish, you know. That's our major sport is alcohol. We got to be careful. And there's a medical condition here. I trust the diagnosis. I'm sure you do, too, that they're trying to help. And the danger is people abuse things. We found that on the oxys, Bill.
Yeah.
You know, it's for pain. It was a good thing. The problem is it worked too well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's starting off, and it's interesting, the total shift here. And we can miss that. I'm an athlete. This is what I do. I go to the drugstore to get my baseball cards. Now I'm going to get my prescriptions. And then I see these other guys that aren't playing sports, and they're using, maybe I'll try that, and it's gone. Right away. Do you think you were addicted right away?
Well, I wanted to clarify just one thing just before I hit that, only because I think it's unfair to not really honor doctors, counselors, therapists, psychotherapists, and different people, because I had a lot of professionals that really did invest into my life at a really high level. You know, they regulated the medications the way that they were supposed to be. They talked with me. They mentored me. They were there for my family. I mean, all of these things are 100% true.
Right.
And I have to give a huge shout out to anybody who may be listening even now who's in that profession that you just, I want to encourage you, just keep doing that. And I know for me, it has impacted my life tremendously. So I wanted to clarify that, and then if you could ask it again.
Yeah, and I do too. My favorite person on the planet is a drug counselor, so we'll just move right along from that.
Right.
And I didn't mean to do that either. I want to make sure, and I'm glad you did that. But what we talked about getting by that is all of a sudden you took a total shift. Were you addicted right away, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I was addicted to the visual aspect of what the life represented, which it represented like this false sense of freedom, or in my sense at that time, it represented freedom, it represented joy, it represented all these things now that we know in the faith community as the fruit of the Spirit, and you know, there's always a counterfeit to the things that are true and real and awesome, and so I think I was chasing after the truth, I was chasing after joy, and I was chasing after this fulfillment, and when I got to it, it actually did feel that way for me. And so I know on my first drink, my first hit, my first snort, all the above, I was addicted right away, highly addicted. In fact, I don't do anything halfway. I don't know many addicts that do anything halfway, because we already know that half measures availed us nothing, right? And so I know that from my perspective, looking back on it, I was all in from the first hit.
Sounds like he could be your little brother.
Yeah, much younger.
Yeah, much younger.
Not as cool, but yeah, much younger.
Yeah,
yeah, and I agree with you. And it's like we know this looking back in the rearview mirror. And I love the fact you took responsibility by talking about the therapists and that. That this was our choice. And we were all in on it. But also, Bill, when he talks about the counterfeit fruits of the Spirit, it's an idol, which is addiction as. And I'm trying to get something that only God can give me. And the deception is you get a little bit of it. And sin is fun for a season. So how long did this go on for you?
So my addiction lasted 11 years. So it was 93 to 2004.
What were some of the consequences from that?
Well, I mean, I had spent a lot of time incarcerated in jail. I had been into many detoxes, many placement homes and treatments. I had been through 6 treatments. And I had been to multiple halfway houses, sober houses, transitional living, and different things like that, which, again, all the above, super grateful and very, very thankful for all of, the different organizations that are out there, homeless shelters, transitional living, and churches that are, you know, taking on the responsibility to really love and reach out to this community that's, you know, is huge.
Well said. So there's a lot of consequences. You're going to jail.
Well, and not to mention, you know, now I'm marked as a 4-time felon because I got busted with guns and burglarizing homes and businesses and distribution of narcotics, crystal meth and cocaine and all types of other drugs. And so you never think about that when you're a 13-year-old pursuing your dream to be a Major League Baseball player, and then all of a sudden here you are with a backpack full of dope, not caring about anything that goes on in the world except where am I going to get my next dollar and where am I going to get my next fix. And so the consequences were more than legal. There was a lot of emotional consequences. There was a lot of, I would say, just life consequences.
Sounds like it. You're an all-in guy. You got guns. Were you dealing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I was more of a street peddler. I'm not going to lie and say that I was anything, you know, because everybody is, and my pastor, Pastor Jeff Hill, always says, you know, we dramatize, we fantasize, and we make ourselves out to be something that we're not. It's like we're either the drug kingpin or we're the worst homeless person on the street, you know, and there's nothing in between. It's one or the other. And for me, you know, I wasn't any big time drug dealer, nothing. You would not find my name in any, you know, cartel list or, you know, gang, you know, affiliation or anything like that. But I do know that I was an in-between for multiple gangs and groups that were organized in what they did. And I was a part of that, you know. And so I was a low-level street drug peddler and addict.
I'm glad he's not in the cartel. Got a huge window over there. Yeah. Were you pretty hopeless?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and on October 11th of 2004, I was at the most hopeless part of my life. Absolutely just wasted, and I'd been up for about 4 days. And I finally reached out to the one person that always showed me love no matter what I was going through, and that person is my mom. And my mom was always praying for me. Whenever the cops would bring me home, she'd be in the other room praying. And I'd always tell her, you know, just be quiet, Mom. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to listen to that, you know, praying and that God stuff and whatever. And I just remember remember thinking to myself, this is probably why I'm getting busted. This is probably why I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing, because my mom won't stop praying, won't stop knocking on the door of the houses that she knows that I'm at. And she was persistent in her love for me. And that really was the reason why, when I was homeless, weighed 100 pounds, on the run from the police, having to face prison time at that moment, but I'm living on the street. And I called my mom, she picked me up, and I turned myself in on October 11th of 2004, was the last day of my addiction, as far as drugs and alcohol and drug. And,
nice.
Yeah.
I love your mother.
She's awesome. She's my hero.
Oh, I just think she's outstanding. That's just such a great story. And probably so that the praying was becoming the roadblocks, the stuff that was stopping you from going down a further road of destruction.
And she had the faith with works. Like, she didn't believe as a believer that her works saved her. She believed that her works were an active piece of her faith. So she put her faith into action through what she did. And by doing that, not only did she help and be that conduit in my life, but she also did it with my younger brother, who was an addict as well at the time. So she was working with two addicts that were out of control.
I love this, Bill. People ask us all the time with family members, what can I do? And we always tell them, pray. And there's power in prayer, persistent prayer. God's timeline is a lot different than ours, but that's the part we can always do. And you know what? That's really all you can do most of the time, but that is enough. Yeah, your mom sounds just great. How did this happen for you in 2004? What did you do to work with God to get in line with Him?
Yeah, so my first day, I had been around the block a few times. And for those of you who are in recovery, you know, whether you're incarcerated or you're in a halfway house or transitional living or whatever the case might be, you know, you have these encounters with God in different ways, supernaturally and just naturally through people that God brings you. He sends people your way. So I had multiple encounters with people that God sent my way that I didn't forget about. And in fact, I was in my jail cell October 11th of 2004, that day that I turned myself in. And I had a Bible that was left there. It was just me and a Bible. And I opened the Bible, and it was open to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. And it said, "Thieves, stop stealing. Instead, work with your hands and give diligently to others in need." And that has become my mission statement for my life ever since that day. And I recommitted my life to Jesus and fully just... I did the, you know, whatever prayer I had heard, the repentance prayer, the serenity prayer, I mean, everything. And I just started crying out. Really what I was doing was crying out to God and surrendering my life to Jesus. And it was from that moment that everything really began to change. And I remember when the door opened the next morning, I started to see people in a different way. I was no longer judging or comparing myself with this person who was a murderer, this person who was a higher level thief, or this person who was a meth cook, because I had hung out with meth cooks. I had stolen pills so that they could make the drug. I mean, I was no better and no different than the next person I was with. God opened up my eyes to see that, and that was transformational for me.
What was your action step after that? Did you go to rehab? You said you had been six
times?
Yeah,
so I was court-ordered to face 33 months in prison. The court, the judge, diverted my sentence from 33 months in prison to Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. So I actually went there for my second time. I had been through there once, but went through there for my second time for the restoration program, and I'm very thankful for Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge in my time there.
Outstanding. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Jed. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We'll take a very short break and be right back.
See if I've got you have a chance to see him. Girl, you really got me going. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, we weren't gone long, and we're back now. Yeah, and if you've missed any of this show, you're going to want to go back and hear all of it. And just let me bring you up to speed real quick. From the beginning, George, his life has been largely redacted. And then we brought our guest, Jed, on. He's been fantastic. What a story.
He has been, yeah.
Started off as a young boy getting involved with ADHD drugs, which got abused. That turned into harder drugs, turns into crime, turns into dealing, lots of jail. But, boy, what a story of redemption when you get into a cell, October 11th, 2004 or 6, 4, open the Bible, and God speaks to you, and you come out of your cell the next morning a different man and has not looked back since. So that's a little recap of where we're at, and now I'm just excited to hear about what God's doing in his life today.
What is he doing in your life today?
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin. But, after I graduated from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge 2005, the restoration program. I went through they had a two-year ministry school. I graduated the two-year ministry school and went on for about 10 years itinerantly traveling. Literally, God opened up the doors for me to travel the world and bring the gospel to some of the craziest parts of the world I had never imagined I would be, in the Middle East, in Europe, in Africa, in South America, and all over the United States. I was never supposed to travel outside of the county or the state, but I started to travel through being able to meet with my probation officer and get approval. So honoring authority, which is another thing in the recovery circle, that sometimes we have problems with authority and we don't grow only because we don't honor the authority. And early on, I decided I had kicked against authority so much in my life that I needed to kind of see maybe this was one of my problems that I should start working on. So I started to really honor authority, police officers, correctional officers, different people. When I met them, I would thank them and different things. But also, just like my probation officer, I had been on probation since 1993. And I was supposed to be on until 2020. So there were all types of miracles. I got off probation 10 years early, and all of a sudden I'm traveling the United States, traveling the world, and all that stuff has just been absolutely amazing, just being able to travel, share the gospel in prisons in third world countries, in little villages in Africa, and in all the primary big major cities in the United States. I mean, just God opened up the doors in so many different ways. It's been amazing to travel extensively and to have restoration in my family with my mom and my brother, and I'm still believing for restoration with my dad. God's blessed me with an amazing wife, my beautiful wife, Erica, and we have six kids together, and that's a whole other story in and of itself. And now I'm currently working as the associate pastor of Serenity Village Community Church in Crystal. And I've been there now for about a year. And so he's just been opening up so many doors. We work with a high-level community, recovery community, every Tuesday night, actually. Every Tuesday night, 6:30 at Serenity Village. We have about 300 to 350, people that are seeking recovery, freedom in recovery, and everything else right there every single week. So, I mean, just actively pursuing the best that God has for my life in my recovery and everything else. And the step three, when I look at that, I'm constantly reminded of something that I heard where it talks about made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. One of the things is, if you ever want to know God's will for your life, find out what his will isn't. And definitely getting high and doing crime is not his will for your life. So if you don't know where to start, like, start there for now and let him continue to reveal himself and his plan to you. So these are some of the things that he's really done. I mean, just miracle after miracle. And I feel like he's just starting to get going. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
He is. One of the things we say on this show all the time, it's the truth, is that God does not save us from our sinful lifestyle without a job for us to do. And you can speak to people that walked the walk you did, and you're not asking them to do anything you didn't do. One of the different things that I heard tonight, Bill, that's so good, is about submitting to authority. As a recovering person, and a struggling, sanctified person, sanctifying, authority to me, I don't like it. But when I started doing what they said, it changed my life. And I think for me where it starts is, I don't want God telling me what to do. What do you think?
Well, I have read a book, an interesting, maybe even controversial book about, and I always line it up with the Word of God too. Like I don't really read a ton, but I read this book by Watchman Nee called Spiritual Authority. And it was life-changing. He said, you're always under authority. And I was like, wow, what does that even mean? And he talked about like going to like a supermarket or different places in today's society, going to like a gas station or going to the movie theater or whatever. There's constantly authority over you no matter where you go and no matter what you do. You're constantly submitting yourself underneath authority as you go through every single day. So if you're more consciously aware of the authority around you, you could be a little bit more aware of God around you, because God establishes authority. Man abuses authority. That's a whole nother story. But there is authority and order put together in the earth. And for me, that was like revolutionary. So then now I can honor the gas station manager instead of evading him. You know what I mean? Because in my addiction, I was constantly hiding because I'm stealing, because I'm, you know, I don't want them to see me because of what I'm doing. Now I'm saying hi, you know, just like you were saying with the baseball cards. I love collecting baseball cards. Before I was addicted, I was buying baseball cards. When I got addicted, I wasn't only stealing baseball cards, I was stealing anything else I could get at the store. And so it's a paradigm shift.
It is.
It was always under authority. It was kind of what I've come to that revelation of. That makes sense.
I guess the authority is a good thing to talk about always because of the rebellious nature of fallen man. And if you don't submit your life to Christ, you're living under the power of sin, and you can't be free from it until the power of Christ comes in to break it. So your authority is you at that point. Well, that or you belong to the devil who has taken you captive to do his will. So when you come to faith in Christ, you finally, for the first time in your life, have the power through what God's grace has done in your life to be free from the power of sin.
I love that, Bill. And when we came in on the break, we had a song called from the Kinks. And I thought of one from the Animals, Bill, way back. It's my life and I do what I want. And I think for all of us that are wavering from our faith, our walk, and addiction, when we get into it, I'm going to do what I want to do. And when it lines up with God, great, that's a nice coincidence. And when you accept Christ, you're convicted. And I would like to get to the point, and I think Tim Keller talks about this, where I did stuff for Christ because I love him. I'm still at the point where I do it a lot of times because there's no consequence for me and I'm happier. But I think, Bill, that's where we try to get, is I love Jesus so much. Like Joseph said when Potiphar's wife came after him, how can I sin against God like that? I want to get there, but you're right, and I have to submit to the authority. And the problem for most of us, the supreme authority in our life is us.
Mm-hmm.
And God can change that through the Word and through prayer. You talked about prayer from your mom. The longer I'm alive, the more and more I see like I have underutilized my time with the Lord and in prayer, Bill.
Well spoken, George. I find that to be an encouragement and an admission that is healthy. And, you know, I think when people hear that, they go, yeah, that's my story too.
Well, you think about his mom praying for years.
Right.
How many times have we heard that story?
Mom, grandma, you know, they're the prayer warriors in the family. And it seems that because of a praying mom or a praying grandma or both, people ended up living.
Yeah.
Instead of dying.
Well, I think about our favorite guest occasionally is Reverend Hunter until he backs out on us. And then
he's got stuff to do.
Yeah, we don't. When do you want to be on the show? We'll be there is our motto. But Rev, Mother Yates was praying for him for years.
Mm-hmm. What a story that is, too.
It's great. So do you like what you're doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's incredible. It's a dream come true. It's something that, like, my mom used to always say to me, like, you know, even as a little kid, I used to always bring just stray people home to the house, feed them, and just be there for them. And a lot of times the kids that I would bring to the house were kids that they had their moms and dads were getting high and drunk at home. Mm. And so, like, even from a young place, like, I believe that there was a call of God in my life. And through the inspiration of my mom, like, I know that there is also a huge calling for dads. Like, I was just talking about this during one of our meetings on last Tuesday night with the men in the group. And I was talking about how, like, I want to be an example to my kids because my mom was an example to me. Dads are also called to be prayer warriors. It's not just the moms and the grandmas. Like, oftentimes we hear that, but it's also us as dads or as spiritual fathers. So I was always mentioning this, during the last group last week with the men. Like, I teach my kids how to pray. And so when I say, like, oh, I'm sick or whatever the case is, my kids now, or if I'm going through something, they'll ask me, and they're 5 and 6, my two youngest, they'll ask me if I want prayer. And immediately I'm like, yeah. So then I go down and I put my hands out and they lay their hands on my hands and they pray for me. And so, you know, some of those things is just like, I love that.
It's good to hear that. I always want to ask guys who work with other people who are in recovery themselves, what are some characteristics of people who make it, and what are some characteristics of people who don't make it? What do you see on that?
Well, for me, what I see is when people make it, some of the things that I see as someone who is submissive in a humble way, humility and submission. They have a willingness to change, if you would. And I would say humility is big, number one. And apart from having a relationship with Christ, like, just having that attribute of being humble, being teachable, and some of those things. I think being able to have mentors and people that can speak into your life, you know, people that know more than you. I think a lot of times people in recovery don't seek out other mentors or, you know, for instance, in my case, having a spiritual father and having other mentors for different areas of my life is critical. I see that as being critical in the recovery community as well. Sponsor, mentor, spiritual father, different people, because if we just stay in the realm of, I know this, I know where I'm going to go, like we were saying, I'm the captain of my own ship. Sometimes it's nice just to be on the ship and allowing somebody else to help guide you.
You know, Jed, you speak with great authority, which comes from the Holy Spirit. I can see that. And you've come in, you've been prayed up, you have come in and you've shared a powerful story. And I just want to thank you for being such a great guest. If you want to share this episode with a friend or someone you think might need it, you can do this without permission from Major League Baseball. And I don't want to go by without mentioning George won the punt, pass, and kick competition when he was 9. You always want to get that in whenever you can.
I peaked a little early.
I know you did, but I want to be honoring to you as best I can. So that wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Awfully glad you've joined us tonight, and thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting Faith Radio. Thank you for letting us come into your car or your home or wherever you are and just be like a meeting for you or like just some friends to hang out with. We love you. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.